I've just peeked behind the curtain to see the future of fashion, and it's blown my mind. My guest this week is Ishita Kabra-Davis, founder of the phenomenal By Rotation, a fashion and clothing rental app, and a woman who is an absolute catalyst for positive change. And it's been dubbed the Airbnb of clothing. I mean, that's not bad, is it? Ishita's mission is basically to build a brand that challenges our sort of conventional norms in owning clothes and allowing us consumers and people who love fashion, oh, I love fashion, to basically consume in a more sustainable way. And it is changing lives, and it's building another business around women and community. By Rotation, it's basically a peer-to-peer rental app. And she was so honest and vulnerable while talking about this new way into the fashion world and how not everybody has been happy that she's there, and how she's taking her experience and using tech and then putting something together that's basically glimpsing into the future. Wow, what a woman. And I'm just so proud to have had her on this podcast. And Ishita, I'm proud of you. And I hope all of you enjoy listening.
Bow your head and let your eyelids close on down. Where we're going, you won't need to bring your frown.
Hi, I'm Holly Tucker, and welcome to my podcast, Conversations of Inspiration. I founded my first business, Not on the High Street, at 28, with a newborn strapped to my chest. Nearly 20 years on, he's all grown up, and I'm running my second business, Holly & Co. I've learned so much about taking risks, running a business, and some extraordinary life lessons along the way, and I know others have too. Yet despite the wealth of experience we have between us, lessons like this are often left unheard, and it can feel like we're travelling our paths alone. So I've reached out to founders and those who simply inspire me to share their hard-earned wisdom with you. My hope is that collectively, these remarkable realizations will help you on your own journey. I like to think of it as inspiration for life. If you enjoy this episode, might I ask you to share it with a friend and to like, subscribe, and review it so that together we can ignite people's passion across the UK. Now, let's begin this week's conversation of inspiration. Hi, Ishita. Welcome to Conversations of Inspiration. It's a pleasure to talk to you today.
Holly, it's such an honour to be with you.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Now, you are the genius founder and CEO behind the fantastic By Rotation, the world's first social fashion app. So basically, everyone listening, think Airbnb, but for designer fashion. And By Rotation has a website and app, and you can basically rent high quality fashion for a fraction of the cost of buying it new. And because of its unique peer-to-peer model, you can also make money and connect with the community. So incredible. And I'm so excited to talk to you today about this. What's it feel to be on sort of the cutting edge of building a business and, you know, the entrepreneurial journey?
I guess it feels personal. You know, business is still very personal at this early stage that we're at. And it just kind of feels like I know my top customers, I know my top lenders, I know my top renters. My team and I are very close to them. And it all feels very personal. It feels like it's, you know, something that I'm breathing every single day, 24/7. And I love it. It feels like a calling.
Yeah, I love that. And long may that continue, by the way, when you grow, because a lot of people might tell you that actually it shouldn't be personal as you grow. And one of the things I would say from my own experience is make it personal all the time, because the second it doesn't feel personal, you can tell brands who have been on the journey and suddenly it's sort of the founder's not around. You can sort of sense it. So I love that you say that. I think it's actually an amazing attribute for women running businesses, that it is personal. And I think the customer feels that. But I was reading about fashion rental recently in the news. And of course, you know this, in a world where we are now able to rent other people's homes or borrow their dogs, we're just talking about being dog mums, it seems only natural that the world eventually, you know, this world of renting reached our wardrobes. And you launched By Rotation in 2019. And as I mentioned, it's a peer-to-peer rental model. I'm wondering if, just from what you've seen in the last few years, are attitudes towards renting changing, not just for those that are renting it, but for those who are listing the clothes?
Yeah, it's been really interesting because we launched in October 2019, and that was 5.5 months before COVID and all the national lockdowns that we've seen.
Yes.
So it almost kind of felt like, oh no, what have we done? Because there's no reason for people to rent clothes. I mean,
yeah,
you know, there's so much more important stuff happening in the world beyond just designer labels that you can wear for less.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually spent a lot of that time educating the public as to why sharing and renting makes sense and is actually better for the environment. It's better for the wallet. You really build community and relationships with your clothes and other people. And actually what came out of that was that we ended up getting more than 60,000 listings, all peer-to-peer on the Buy Rotation app. And you know, you're a marketplace founder, you know exactly how it goes when it comes to demand and supply. And so we use this time, you know, the 18 months of back and forth lockdowns to really build the supply side dynamics so that when we were out of lockdown, so say kind of in April 2021, we had phenomenal demand. We had phenomenal growth, something that I completely didn't anticipate at all. And now we actually have people on the app making more than £4,000 a month from lending out their dresses and their bags. And I think it's super exciting because my own background is in investments. So I used to be an investment analyst for the first 6.5 years of my career. And we've now made fashion, so contemporary fashion like dresses and, you know, not just Chanel and Birkin bags, but your regular Rixo dress that you can buy for £400 into an asset class. You know, women are making 5 times the money back from the dress that they purchased in the first place, and they're still owning it.
I love it. I love it. And what I love about what you did, and again, it's so interesting talking to another marketplace founder, because for anyone listening, I'm not going to geek out here, everybody, but you know, it is a unique dynamic. And I love that you use that time so that when the tills were open, you had all, you know, created the department store that you needed to create, right? Because that's actually what works. And in a marketplace, you have to have that in order to be able to make the metrics work, et cetera, et cetera. So I love that you did that. In one of the articles I read, it mentioned, like you're saying, that the popularity that's growing, that for many lenders, this has now basically become a side hustle. I mean, £4,000 a month. And for others, it's also, I read, it's paying towards their IVF journey and some other incredible stories. I mean, £4,000, obviously, that's going to be the top level. It really does start to, I don't know, empower. Going on a bit of a sidetrack here, but I was talking to somebody about like women shopping, right? And how, and I don't want to use the word derogatory, but how it's always been seen as, oh, she does the shopping, or she does the kids' party, or what's this other box that's arrived? What have you bought? And there's all this chat that goes on, I think, and it's almost like a second-class act, shopping, because women do it. Do you see what I'm trying to say? It's hard to describe. What I love and what I'm on my own journey doing is saying, can we just flip that narrative? Thank you very much. Because I don't need to feel that my invisible labor, actually, I want to empower my invisible labor. I don't even want to call it invisible labor. Why do you think we have friends, family? Because I show love through gifting and caring for them. I create connection. I create an amazing Christmas. I create memories. It's not just shopping. Same for you, right? It's, you know, the guilt of buying. Well, if I can now make money from that purchase, it's not such a stupid purchase, is it?
Yeah, and actually on the topic of gender, it's gotten to a point where we have male partners of our rotators, as we call people who are on the Buy Rotation app, encouraging their female partners to invest in high quality pieces because they know now that women, as you say, are funding their IVF journeys, they're paying for childcare, they're saving up for their mortgages, they're saving up for their holidays, or they're even just paying for a cocktail or a meal out. And actually, I think it's wild and it's crazy and it makes me so happy and proud that we've made fashion, which is often seen, you know, fashion and shopping, which is often seen as, you know, materialistic, shallow, superficial, vapid even.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually made it into something that can be financially empowering.
Yeah.
You know, dresses and designer clothes can actually be an actual asset class where you're actually beating the stock market.
Good for you. Good for you. I want to go back to little you, if that's okay, and learn more about your childhood, where you grew up and your passion. So you were born in Rajasthan, India, one of three children, and you moved to Singapore when you were two, and you grew up there with your parents who were also entrepreneurs. You've got it in the blood. What impact do you think that that had on your upbringing? You know, was it something you always aspired to be, or was it, you know, sometimes with kids, it's like the opposite. You know, I definitely don't want to be a doctor because I've seen what it does to my parents.
Yeah. So it's kind of great, by the way, you know, my entire CV. It's crazy. I don't know where you found that, but thank you.
My research. Are you joking?
You're a spy.
I'm being so keen to talk to you.
No, that's so sweet. But yes, that's correct. My parents are entrepreneurs and actually self-made entrepreneurs. You know, my dad has a bit of a rags to riches kind of story, which I think really inspired me from a very young age. There was a lot of tough love involved, but I always felt like, well, if my dad could do that, you know, by sleeping on a bench outside the bank when he was in high school to pay for his higher education, then I should be able to do so much more because of what he's given me. Mm-hmm. So it always really inspired me. And I always thought I wanted to found my own business. But, you know, back then, being an entrepreneur, being a founder, being a CEO was not what it is today. Today, because of social media, it's very glamorized. Mm. I want it to be, not to say I was here first, but you know, I was really inspired to be a business owner and an entrepreneur because of my dad and because of my, you know, because of my mom and dad and what they built together.
Yes.
So for me, that was the exciting thing of it, you know, the trade off it, as opposed to us, you know, especially as consumer tech female founders needing to have a high profile because we're essentially free ambassadors for our company.
Yes.
I think for me, I still kind of struggle with that. What I find really exciting is being able to build something that has profit and purpose.
Mm, absolutely. And you just mentioned tough love there, the school of tough love. And I think that's quite typical of entrepreneurs because I suppose we know the resilience that you need. So your parents knew the resilience, you know, and the grit that it takes to be successful. And they want to pass that on. And I actually think, however tough it is a gift that can be given. And I was it that way for you? Did they pass on that ambition and drive even from an early age? I mean, what were you like at school? Because when I researched it, it seems you've always been very disciplined and a hard worker naturally. But did it come from that school of tough love?
I think, I don't know. So I was a prefect in school and then head girl. So I guess the discipline side
me
could
too.
Be.
But I think I was a much naughtier one. I can already tell, by the way, that I think so. I was nearly expelled the year before I became head girl. So I always like to say it's like a good lesson in 12 months changing your brand.
Yeah.
You know, that was the whole
brand
thing.
I love that. No, but I'm with you. I was quite rebellious growing up. You know, as you mentioned, you've done the research. I was a middle child, you know, often, you know, not good enough to be, you know, the leader of the pack, not young enough to be the apple of everyone's eye. So always kind of looking for ways to get attention from my family and my friends and all of that. So I'd say I was probably like a rebellious one. In terms of hardworking, I think I was very goal-oriented. You know, I was like, these things in school will be good for me to get into a great university. These things in university will be great for me to get a great job. These things when I'm working in the job will be great for me to get promoted. It was always about
the next ladder, the next bit.
Exactly. And it was almost not very strategic. It was just, I want to go and get this. You know, I could have almost done better if I was more planned and strategic about it. But I would say I was very determined when I was young. And when I was younger, I was quite entrepreneurial as well. So, you know, I think about this and now we joke about it and my parents always bring it up. But when I was 11 years old, I used to be a web designer and I used to sell layouts, as they call it, like graphic design to other people online back when PayPal was like a very new thing. You know, this was like, I think 2002. And my parents were like, what are you doing? Like, who are you chatting with? Who are all these strangers? You know, I had pen pals online because of this website called neopets.com, which is like virtual pets online. I wasn't allowed to have pets because Asians don't really do that in Singapore. And that sort of, you know, led me on to create a message board. This is before Reddit, which recently just IPO'd. I didn't really know what I was doing. It was just fun. It was cool. It was different from the regular school life. You know, it was different from playing sports or rollerblading or whatever. It just added something different that I thought I could excel in on my own. And weirdly enough, we've done a full circle and now I've got a community-oriented digital business, which is actually bringing physical and tangible impact to people's day-to-day lives. So it does kind of feel like it was all meant to be.
It's a full circle. It was all meant to be. And always on this podcast, we look at that golden thread from childhood and we can always draw it to the person I'm speaking to today. You know, it's an amazing thing. You spent the later years of your education, you mentioned, between the US and the UK before becoming an investment analyst, as you said, at Standard Life Investments. And I know you said that the skills you learned, the resilience, the analytical thinking, negotiation, listening to your gut, and what every founder needs to learn. How valuable was it for you to have had that corporate experience, to be part of a company which you could hone your skills and then maybe make mistakes and then come out of it and bring it into your own company? Because that's not always the journey people take, right? They just create a business and they haven't had the corporate experience. And sometimes that can be good. Sometimes it can also, you know, you try and bring the corporate into the business, which is a brand new baby, you know, it can't handle it. What's your experience?
For me, the experience has been very much like as a needs must. So I came to the UK as an international student. So when I graduated, I definitely had to work at a large corporate, which would sponsor my visa to be in the country, essentially. Mm-hmm. But I very quickly realized throughout my internships during university that I actually really enjoyed working in investments. And those 6.5 years that I spent before I founded BioRotation, they actually really did build up this work ethic, which I personally don't see as very common in what we're doing in the fashion tech and the media and, you know, this sort of world. Mm-hmm. I don't see it very often. And it's like this uncommon mix of having a commercial background and skill set. Mm-hmm. You know, having this background, you know, working in a large corporate, working in investments in particular, where, by the way, you do make decisions within, you know, the hour. And you make decisions for crazy amounts of money that don't belong to you. I think those kind of things really made me have a good intuition, a good gut feeling. It also really put me under pressure and make me more accountable for the decisions that I was making. Mm. I think these things really prepared me to be a first-time founder, a solo founder that was, you know, happy to make all these difficult decisions, which often, as you know very well, Holly, we have to do within a day and we have to move on within the same day and go and do a bunch of other public facing things like nothing bad ever happened. So I do feel like that really equipped me with this sort of very tenacious sort of mindset and attitude, which I think is needed if you're going to do like a, you know, a scale, like a business that does need to scale.
Yeah.
And I think, again, because of the way now entrepreneurship is positioned thanks to media, thanks or no thanks to media, my personal view is that it does seem a bit naive to jump into founding your own business. I mean, you can get very lucky and, you know, you could be someone who has, you know, a lot of family wealth, a huge safety net. You could have a huge garage that your parents own to work in. That's how Apple and Facebook were founded, right? Yeah. You know, all those stories that we hear. But, you know, equally some people can't. And I would highly always recommend working at a larger company and making the mistakes and picking up the skills and the work ethic from your superiors, because we all need someone that we should be learning from.
Yeah.
You know, my dad worked at Cadbury as an accountant. That's the first thing he did out of university. That's such a big firm, such a big practice in India. And then that's when he founded his own business in export and import.
I think that's such a great piece of advice. And certainly if you have your mindset where it's all leading to something else, so it's not going, I'm stuck in the corporate world. And maybe someone listening, you know, you're in a job potentially that you do want to move out of. Look at it as the stepping stone to where you want to go. Use the infrastructure, the people around you to absorb as much as you can. Because as you said, it is, you know, very much, it does set you up. I want to talk to you about actually the moment it happened. So I read that the idea for Birotation came to you during your honeymoon. And in your own words, you were inspired by a first world problem. Can you just tell me that little part of the nugget, the moment it happened?
Yeah, I mean, again, this whole idea like of wanting to have access to designer clothes, quality clothes, nice clothes, it can seem quite, again, you know, materialistic and shallow. So it was very much a first world problem that I was having, which was I was going on my honeymoon, which was a trip of a lifetime back to Rajasthan, India, where I was born. And I wanted to show my husband, who's not, you know, from that part, you know, he's not Indian. I wanted to show him my roots. And I couldn't, you know, I start thinking about all the outfits that I wanted to wear along with the itinerary for the trip. I still have it on my spreadsheet. And that's when I started thinking about, could I borrow some clothes? Could I rent some stuff? Like how you have, you know, various sort of solutions. Sorry, did you hear that?
We're a dog-friendly podcast here. As the listeners will know, my two pop up all the time.
And you know, it became very clear to me that there was no such solution, at least like a digital solution in mm-hmm. the UK and even Europe for that matter. And all the incumbents globally, from like a quick market research, were very inventory heavy solutions that had very outdated styles. Not something that I wanted to wear to like a glamorous holiday and a vacation mm-hmm. for, you know, such a special trip. So this idea sort of started brewing, and I had, you know, I had it, you know, I had another sheet open in my workbook for my Rajasthan itinerary. And I was kind of, you know, surveying the market, not a proper business plan per se, right? Because no. I still had my full-time job at the hedge fund, but it sort of started brewing. And then I went on my honeymoon, and then I was in Rajasthan after 14 years. I hadn't been back for 14 years because home for me now is Singapore. And I just couldn't help but feel really, really guilty when I saw all the textile waste, not just in Jaipur and in Udaipur, which are like, you know, cities within Rajasthan, but also my suburban hometown. You know, I just kind of felt like I was a part of the problem. I was very consumerist in my mindset. You know, I grew up in Singapore, where one of our national hobbies is shopping and the other is eating. So I had really prescribed to that cycle of, you know, having a good disposable income and buying all these things that I don't really need, but it would just be nice to have. Or maybe I thought they would buy me happiness, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I figured, what if we went a step further in the incumbent fashion rental model? What if we made it more like Airbnb, as you mentioned, or mm-hmm. Uber? You know, these are very well-known sharing economies in the world, which have completely scaled up. They are global. People use them as verbs now. What if we can do that with this idea that I have? Yeah. And that's when the idea for Birotation was born.
Oh my goodness. What did you do? Did you have to persuade anybody? I just want to quit my job and just do something, guys. No one panic. Or were they supportive?
Yeah. I mean, I myself was very hesitant because I was like, oh, but wait, I like my salary. I like my job. Yep. I like going to Pilates. I like going for brunch. You know, all those sort of first world problems that all these yuppies have, right? Myself included. Yep. And I actually decided at the last leg of our honeymoon, so we were in, you know, where you see the sand dunes of Rajasthan, Jaisalmer, mm-hmm. I decided to create a Facebook event. I don't know if anyone remembers those. There needs to be an app, by the way, for that as well. But I decided to create a Facebook event of inviting all my friends. You know, we had gotten married a few months ago. I was going to have a puppy. I was going to, you know, I'm very efficient. I was giving birth to a puppy as soon as I got back from my honeymoon, as we do. And, you know, I kind of used that to be like, I want you to meet my puppy, Saffron. And I've got this idea that I want to kind of run past you. So it was a week after I'd come back and I was flying soon to New York again for work. And I ran them the idea, you know, a lot of my female friends who are all bankers, lawyers, consultants, very corporate women. And I brought them over to my one bedroom apartment and had all my clothes on rails, asked a few friends to bring their stuff. And I said, what do you think? You can rent my clothes. I'm going to make a platform and you can pay me to rent them. You can rent whatever you want. Like, you don't have to feel shy about wanting to borrow my clothes because I just wore them last week. What if you could pay a stranger? And some of us are different sizes as well. So what if you could rent from another woman that you don't know at all? Maybe a woman from Instagram.
And what did they say?
Well, they were like, this is weird, but we're hearing a lot about conscious collections and, you know, Extinction Rebellion and, you know, all about the environment and all of that. So we're kind of hearing about it more, sustainability. I think it could work, but this is still a bit weird. And we're probably not your early adopters, which is very true. Because honestly speaking, I'm not an early adopter for most sort of gadgets and apps and things like that either. You know, I was probably, I would say, like the late adopter. So I was, you know, I think I booked an Airbnb in the year 2010, which I think was still early, but it wasn't the earliest people to have done it, right?
Yes.
So that's when I kind of realized my friends are great. They're going to be my main customer bunch because they have disposable income. They don't get free stuff like a lot of journalists and influencers and editors do. But those guys have a lot of eyeballs on them. So those are my early adopters. And that's when I kind of understood I will need to start networking, you know, after work or on the weekends by going to all these events where I can find people in fashion and media and sustainability and tell them about this business that I've created, essentially. But it was all very, I would say, scrappy. I can't tell you that I have a 20-page business plan. I think eventually before I was deciding to quit my full-time job, and that was 6 months in, I had then made a financial model, and it was more a model to show the opportunity cost of what my income and earnings would be if I stayed in my current job and career versus what the valuation and what the earnings of buy rotation could be.
And, you know, this is the thing. You have to believe in that spreadsheet, right? Because actually one is true and one is fictitious right at this point in time. You know, it's this is what it could be, but it's that sense that a founder gets, because ultimately I think, and so many entrepreneurs start in this way, is the business was founded on a real need, a real issue, an actual something that you were dealing with, and you were creating the solution to the issue that you were dealing with. And the amount of people I have interviewed on this podcast where that's exactly what it is. If it's the founders of Leon, there they were managing consultants, and they were on the road on the M25, and they absolutely had a cheeky hamburger whenever they could, and they just got fatter and fatter, and they were sitting in their car, and then they said, my God, why isn't there, as they chomped on their Burger King, why isn't there just a healthier burger, right? Why isn't fast food healthier? And Leon was born. You know, I could tell you all that this is where, and I also think it's so important that a founder has that experience. So however much it's scaling, they can go back to the core issue that you were solving and make it better and better and better and better all the time. What is it about handmade items that just feels so soulful? Is it the fact that they're made to last, I wonder? Or is it that you know someone has poured all they've got into creating them? Or maybe it's that you know they are one of a kind, not mass produced, the finest quality and perfectly imperfect. Because that's our passion at Holly & Co. Our marketplace is a treasure trove of unique finds, shining a light on a collective of brilliant founders, or as we call them, our co's, the talented community, putting the co into Holly & Co. I've brought together a movement of creators who champion quality, sustainability, and purpose. A marketplace designed to celebrate craftsmanship, craftswomanship, handmade products, and that special touch of magic that only makers bring. Something truly creative and colourful in retail that we've never seen before. There is so much to share, but I'll let you discover it for yourself if you already haven't. Find us at holly.co, the home of small business, where you can vote with your money to help preserve crafts, celebrate originality, and help people do what they love. Now, back to our conversation of inspiration. So tell me about how you started in those early days, because again, you know, I've written a book, Do What You Love, Love What You Do. I'm like, scrap the business plan, guys. It's about having a plan rather than a business plan, because I think that actually can put off many people. Now, you had a different type of upbringing in terms of what your job is. But for a lot of people, that can be, you know, ultimately, and I think what you said earlier, I loved, you know, every single day, mass decisions are being made. You are turning, you know, that yesterday we were turning right. Today, it's been proven that right is not the right turn. And we're going to go left. And by the way, by 6 p.m., we need to go left. And that's the truth, right? It is so fast. So that business plan that was all about turning right was a complete waste of time.
Yes.
But actually having the plan out there, you know, that you can see and being able to move and see the vision and understand the destination you're getting to, but it, you just might not have the plots, you know, the course directions perfectly mapped. Tell me about those early days when you started. You obviously went into lockdown, right? So that's quite a unique experience. So tell me about maybe after lockdown that suddenly it happened.
So after lockdown, we were seeing crazy demand on the app and we were like, thank God there are so many listings that we spent all this time educating and building.
Yeah.
Because it was very easy to kind of be like, okay, well, it's lockdown. We're just going to wait and see to what happens. And
yep.
I'm just going to enjoy, I don't know, you know, no offense to anyone, but you know, I'm just going to read a lot of books self-improve myself and you know, kind of paint and make banana bread, which is also fine. I did all those things.
Yep.
But for me, it was like this business, the whole point of it is that it's a scalable marketplace that has no inventory whatsoever. So technically, it should survive even during this period.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, there'll be no demand, but actually we can work on the other things, which is user acquisition and supply side dynamics. So we were very, very, you know, careful, curated. We didn't have a brand because we were only 5.5 months into COVID. So that's when we spent all this time building all of this. So right out of COVID, you know, we were getting crazy demand. We had gotten this offer from Westfield, White City, to essentially launch the world's largest fashion rental pop-up for us. It was 3,700 square feet. I don't think I'd ever felt this appreciated in my life. They essentially wanted to make our brand come to life. That was really, I think, the moment that it became clear to me that this isn't just like some fashion people and media people talking about us. We're actually in a mall that a lot of people go to and visit. A lot of locals, like a lot of people who live in the UK, go to run their errands.
Mm.
And we're next to Zara and Victoria's Secret and I think that was Hackett or something.
Yeah.
You know, we're next to a lot of the contemporary brands that were convincing people not to spend that and rather rent from us for higher quality pieces. So I think for me, that was really the moment when I realized we were very valuable as a community, as a brand, as a business model, and more people wanted, you know, the British people wanted more of us.
You sound very confident, right? That, you know, and then Westfield called and then we were like, let's go there. And, you know, this is when I realized, tell me did you have doubt? Did you have, you know, when you also mentioned earlier, you know, when you're a lone sole founder, the responsibility that you have on your hands, you know, for every single direction, right, left, straight forward, and the next day, and it happens again and again. You sound confident now, proof of the project, turns in a business, etc. Did you have moments of self-doubt to navigate the course?
It was a tough pill to swallow that, you know, I've finally gone full-time on buy rotation, but now it's all lockdown. You know, I could have continued running the business as a side hustle and earned my salary.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely, as you know very well, Holly, a lot that we give up personally, professionally, financially to be founders and CEOs and entrepreneurs. It's not just glamour. You know, there's a lot of stuff.
The only thing I'd say about you is yours is a bit glamorous because of what you do. I would say you know, luckily you have a little bit of that, but I always say to everybody, it is the most least unglamorous job you can have.
That's
get the marigolds on. It's never ending. You're your worst own boss. I mean, you're the worst boss you could ever have, ever.
Exactly.
Who's never happy with anything you do.
And the journey is still, you know, filled with self-doubt. And I think I can't recommend this job, as you said, to anyone. I think you have to be a very, very resilient person. You have to be very tenacious. You have to be relentless almost. Even when nothing works for you, you will still stand up and be like, I'm still going to try and, you know, check that stone because I don't think I've turned that one.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say it's not for everyone. You know, there's been times when we've been through some very, very ugly spots, right? Like, I mean, fundraising, as you know, is notoriously
I'm going to ask you about that now.
Yeah, it's notoriously difficult for female founders, for then if you're a woman of color, and then if you're an immigrant, you didn't go to the same schools, you don't know these people, they don't know your parents, so they can't really trust you, so they won't give you money. So that was an issue. The other thing that happened during COVID, which was quite a big shock, was one of our I would call them a peer, but I think they see us as a competitor, you know, tried to sue us and shut us down. And it was very much like women don't actually support other women. And we're too early to be even, you know, doing such things to each other. But that was a complete surprise and shock. But I think, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And for me, that was, again, just another proof that people are worried about us because we are kind of, you know, moving the market. We are very much disrupting the space, and that's, you know, ruffling some feathers, and that's fine. But that was sort of, you know, I guess sort of a rude shock of realizing that not everything is positive and great.
Yeah, I can imagine. And sometimes, I mean, you know, again, it's the ruffling of the feathers, as difficult as it is to deal with, it is that you are moving something. People are paying attention to you. It must be that you're doing something, right? Because actually people are pissed off with you already and you're not even born, right? Yes. So it's like, oh my God, what's this going to happen? And I want to talk to you about the raising money, because I spoke to Sharmadine Reed on this podcast and was, you know, and we were talking about the shocking statistics. And I talk all the time about, you know, I've been raising money for 20 years as a female entrepreneur, and the shocking statistics. And actually, it gets even worse, doesn't it? So 0.02% of VC funding in the UK has gone to Black female founders in the last decade, when I was talking to Sharmadine. The way that that's all built, the, as you just said, the sort of the city and how that money is, the infrastructure and what it is, and who's even listening to you? You know, this is the other thing. 2006, we raised our first round. The audience I was talking to, I mean, I was a 27-year-old girl, but the audience I was talking to, you know, I was just trying to explain to them about shopping and creativity and buying unique items. And I was talking to a middle-aged, white, grey-haired man. And I was thinking, do you do the shopping? Oh, don't be ridiculous. My wife does the shopping. And what's this? Is this crafts? And it was, my audience didn't get it. Whereas if today, we've just launched our my second marketplace. Today, when I talk to an epic shopper who has shopped with Not on the High Street, now shops with Holly & Co., they literally can't even get the words out. They're so excited.
Yeah.
That's who I should be talking to.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone who is a consumer. And yet, how can we do that when 30% of all VCs in senior positions in VCs are women? 30%.
Yeah, they're not the decision makers. It's true. And by the time that it goes to the investment committee, which does make the decisions, you'll see that oftentimes the people who are writing the check are males, middle-aged men, who probably don't really understand why, you know, there's a marketplace for arts and craft, or why women apparently want to rent clothes for every event or occasion that they're going for. You know, they just sort of don't really understand why there is a need for the solution that we're creating. But that's the whole point. The point is there's a gap in the market. However, there was a lot of funding for speedy grocery deliveries, which, you know, all at once, which, you know, there's all these sort of themes that, you know, they all kind of want to play into, and it's very much herd mentality. You know, being an investor in the public markets, I fully understand and appreciate it. But you would have thought that in the early stage of funding, where there's so much opacity in what people are building, you'd think that they'd really actually not look at what was happening and what other people were doing, but actually look for things that aren't being fully explored and being invested and given capital to, because the point is to find the diamond in the rough, the one diamond out of the thousands of opportunities and pitch decks that get sent to them. But instead, they still act very differently, like a public market would, and go and invest like a herd. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's also too much hype, I feel, through, you know, for venture funding and institutional funding. I mean, we are venture backed, and I'm incredibly lucky that I have the best venture funds on my cap table who are very, very supportive throughout, you know, the thick and the thin. They are, you know, they care a lot about, you know, my well-being, be that, you know, mental, physical, you know, needing holidays or whatever, like my own breaks. And, you know, they ask me if I feel any burnout, and I refuse to acknowledge any sort of burnout. And they're like, we need you to just take some time off. And, you know, that doesn't happen for everyone, right? People might glorify taking venture funding and then end up doing nothing with it, which actually is worse for us founders out there, because then it gives a track record that they haven't really done anything with their business, and they've actually just spent investor money. And I think that's maybe a cultural thing as well, I feel. And sorry, I'm getting into a lot of themes, but I feel, and again, I think maybe it's a cultural thing, but Asians are very careful about other people's money. The reason for that is we don't like to be obliged. We don't, you know, I'm terrible at asking for help. I'm terrible at asking for favors. If I've asked you for something, I will make sure I do something back for you, hopefully even a little better than what you did for me. And that's just maybe a cultural thing that we grew up with. So asking other people for money and getting them on my cap table was very uncomfortable for me. I didn't think that it was very, you know, glamorous. And I, for me, I almost felt like, yeah, sure, I raised, you know, $3 million, but how much equity did I give? People don't really know the other side of that story, because that's not what the journalists are writing. And that's not what, you know, that isn't like the exciting stuff. So all you want to do is put like an, no offense, but like a female's, you know, pretty photo and be like, she raised this much money. But no one really knows the reality of how much has been given away and what actually is done with the money after it's been raised. So I'm so careful about who's on my cap table. And actually, one of the things I wanted to say when we were talking about my career working in investments before, that corporate career, I actually have a lot of my ex-colleagues on my cap table. Who gave me money in my family and friends round, my first ever round, because they were like, we've seen you at work. This is a cool idea. We think there's something special about you. We believe in you as a founder. So it's another way to get money as well for your investment.
It's the money that you definitely don't want to let down. That's the only other thing about that. It's very, very precious money, isn't it? When it's family and friends. I mean, going back to also the statistics, it's 1.7% of UK venture capital funding goes to ethnic minorities. And as we know, only, well, under 3% goes to women generally, right? And it is absolutely, when we think of what the disposable income that we spend within a household, that that is the case. So when we do make it, when we do get through, it is seen as sort of, as you said, I love the, you know, the pretty picture, the woman get, you know, it's like, my God, it's like, please stop it. It is actually ridiculous. And I absolutely loved, I watched a while ago you, and I didn't quite realize it was you, but I spoke about what you said in a meeting and then realized it was you. Because actually there you were, where, I don't know where you were, but you said, thanks everyone. I don't need, we don't need mentorship and we don't need training. We just need money. And it's just like, I literally, I watched it and I was running somewhere and I went to my next meeting. I said, I've just seen this amazing woman. I mean, of course we don't need, you know, fucking mentorship. I just need cash. Thank you very much. So that I can build this thing and make you money. I loved it.
Thank you.
I thought it was brilliant. Where were you?
That was the United Nations headquarters. It was such an honor to speak there last summer, summer of 2023. And, you know, it just sort of happened where they were asking, how can we help you? You know, how can, you know, women in sustainability and women fighting against the climate crisis, how can we support you? And I just had this sort of rant where I was like, I'm sorry, but I just don't want any more office hours. And I'm like, why don't you just give us money? Why are you paying mentors to then coach us? Like, for me, that's also a bit weird and a bit broken, right? And I'm sorry, I say it as it is, but I just think there's a lot of lip service and there's not enough action. So, and I tend to have a good intuition about people. You know, I know, you know, excuse my French, I know who's bullshitting and who's not. So if I get that sense, I try not to invest much time with that person or that entity. I think it's so important to also be careful of your time and who you associate yourself with in the space. Because it does matter. Because who you are with also shows, I suppose, you know, how you're positioning your business and what your values are. You know that, Holly.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Who you're associated with, who's backing you. And I think, again, go on that gut feel. What was it like getting into the world so that you're going into completely, you're going to use your mindset and your brains and everything you've learned from your investment background. But what was it like going into fashion? You know, that was what you were trading, fashion. What did that feel like?
It was very difficult to get into the space. I mean, it was very, you know, it, it is exactly as you see it and how you would imagine it. It's very exclusive. You know, there's a lot of sharp elbows, a lot of people who don't look like you, who don't speak like you, you know, have completely different values to you. And I actually just found that, you know, meeting my tribe, finding my tribe was the best way to go about it. A lot of it had to do with, you know, I eventually started gaining more traction and people took me more seriously once they had seen the product. So that's the mm-hmm. bi-rotation platform. You know, once they saw it was real, they were like, this thing is real. It actually works. And I've mm-hmm. heard about it getting into press. I've seen like a few, you know, well-known people talk about it. So influencers and VIPs. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll give it a chance. Maybe I'll give her a chance. And I think that took a lot of, you know, I was going to like 5 events a week while working full time.
Oh my gosh.
Just to.
How knackering.
Well, just to sit front row at a panel talk and after the panel, ask a question, be the first person to mm-hmm. ask a question and really put myself out there. Mm-hmm. That's a practical tip right there. Yeah, it was really very much to like have a presence and find space for myself in that room and in that circle. Like a lot of my my stakeholders will tell me, they'll be like, it's crazy that you're not even British. I still have my Indian passport. It's crazy that you're not even British and you've got this incredible network. You've built this incredible British business, which you've now launched in the US. I mean, you planted the flag there. Thank you. And I'm proud of it. You know, it's crazy to think like other people believing in me and obviously giving me the capital to do so. And then having customers who are happy really enabled me to find my calling in life. Mm. I think that is special.
Oh my goodness. And this is, yeah, I love that, your calling in life. And you're obviously talented and building that network as you have. And those were people who could be very useful to you, et cetera. But actually, you've also built a community. And in a way, I mean, I'm in a similar mindset that I have my who I go to for advice or practical things that we need, marketing, money, all those sorts of things. But actually, the group that makes me fly is the community, because actually, whereas I'm almost trying to fit into someone else's world, when you build a community, it's actually you're part of that tribe. It is like-minded people. You do talk the same. You speak, you know, you have same values. You have all those sorts of things. What has that meant to you to have a community, and how important, if you were thinking of building a business now and then someone's listening to this, you know, we do talk about community all the time, and corporates use, I'm doing inverted commas for those that can't see me, on community, which actually they just think is their Instagram following. And it's like, well, no, hang on a minute. It's far more than that. Tell me how important it's been to you.
Yeah, very commercially speaking, we're a peer-to-peer business model. So we are actually only as good as our customers, right? Mm-hmm. So that's our demand side. So people who are renting clothes, and the supply side, which is people, lenders who are lending out their clothes. So it's actually very important, just even for commercial reasons, to give a lot of love to our customers mm-hmm. because we, you know, as happy as they are, they will put the best stuff on the app. They will trust each other more. They will have a great experience and they'll provide a great experience mm-hmm. to each other as well. Mm-hmm. So it's super important commercially for us to do that. But also, you know, I guess just for the greater good, because we are very mission oriented and our mission is to transform consumption for good. We've always made it a point that, you know, we want to share the success stories, the heartwarming stories, essentially the joy that comes from using bi-rotation with each other so they can understand how this is a great way to actually minimize your environmental footprint when you do want to enjoy a new dress or, you know, you do feel like experimenting with your style. So there's no shame in wanting new experiences and access to new things. Mm. But actually, those new things don't need to be new. They just could be belonging to someone else.
And I love the stories I read about one lender sent a dress free of charge to a renter because she's lost her job, or how another renter sent back a wedding dress to the lender with a slice of wedding cake.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the stuff that, you know, can you believe that you're even part of that, you know, that women caring for women. It's a very, very beautiful thing. I spent 20 years doing it. You know, it is, you feel very honored to be part of it.
Yeah, it's truly special, you know, and just again, bringing back meaning to fashion and clothing, which I just feel especially recently with the rise of fast fashion, you know, there's been so little meaning that we all, myself included, you know, I've been guilty of that, have given to every purchase that I've made when it came to fashion and clothes. And I think we're bringing that back. You know, we're bringing back the, you know, conscious consumption, being more strategic about what you do actually shop, remembering the reasons and how you felt when you wore that piece and that item. And it's so nice to kind of bring that back. And I think that all comes from the storytelling of our community. And community, I think, is such a big buzzword for 2024. As like a business owner, you know that. You know, there's a lot of talk about how this year is going to be the year for brand, community, mission, values over things like performance marketing, you know, so paid spend. And I truly agree with that, but it's something we've been doing since our inception.
Dell Technologies are passionate champions of small businesses. They recognize that it can be a lonely road, and so they have the Dell Women's Entrepreneur Network, or DWEN for short, which is a worldwide community of over 100,000 female founders. They run free events and mentoring programs and have a network of brilliant women all connecting and sharing insight. They also recognize that for many small businesses, visibility is one of the biggest challenges they face when trying to reach new customers. So each week, Dell give away their ad break space. So now I'm going to hand over to this week's winner of Dell's independent ad break.
Are you an artist, a maker, a creative or artisan? Would you like to showcase your work to a new wider audience? How about the beautiful tourist hotspot of North Norfolk? We have just the thing for you. We are a pop-up gallery, purpose-designed for our weekly residents to showcase their work in the bustling town of Holt near the Norfolk coast, which is renowned for its galleries and bustling high street. And do you know what the bonus is? If you are not local, there is accommodation above for you to stay and have a working holiday. Chapel Yard in Holt is a small shopping yard with some wonderful independent businesses to browse. So if you're visiting Holt this year, be sure to give us a follow on Instagram to see who is in the gallery for the week that you're there, and drop in to see our residents and their hard work. Find us on Instagram or Facebook at Makers Gallery Holt.
Thank you, Dell, for your support and generosity. If you'd like to find out more about DWEN and connect with brilliant and inspiring women, or you'd like to be in with a chance to have your very own ad break here on this series, head to holly.co/Dell. Now, back to this week's conversation of inspiration. How does your family now feel about what you do, your husband? Because I think that's something that's not really spoken about, which is the, as you said, the impact. You know, you're on a rocket and you're holding on, right? And you've just launched in the US. You just like, we casually talk about it. I mean, I can only imagine what has gone on behind the scenes to enter a new market. What is the reality of your world when you have to work as you work?
The weekdays are incredibly hectic, busy, and, you know, I'm wearing many different hats and like the brain is in quite a few different streams, you know, so I'm recording a podcast with you now. I'm doing quite a few external meetings when it comes to speaking to investors. I'm also having internal meetings about our marketing plans for Q2. Like there's just many different work streams. And in the evening, I'm hosting an event with Vacheron, the timepiece maker. It's many different sort of audiences that I'm meeting. And, you know, I'm like a host in one, I'm a guest in one, I'm a decision maker in another, I'm a negotiator in another. So I'd say the weekdays are very, very full on. The weekends, it's come to a point where it's very well known within my close friends and even, I guess, this world of fashion and media that I just spend my weekend with my husband and my dog. And we only stay in our neighborhood. I'm very well known for not leaving the neighborhood. But it's really, really important for me to recharge. And I don't want any external influences on me while I'm recharging. I don't need to be a part of the scene. And I don't really have FOMO, which I know can be really tough, especially when you're in this stage of your career where you feel like you always need to be plugged on. But for me, I find a lot of energy from myself and the people closest to me.
Yes.
I think my family is proud. You know, my dad will never say so, but he apparently tells his friends. So I find out from them. and, you know, I think there's a lot of sacrifices, as you said, that aren't spoken about that my husband and I have made for me to be in the limelight, the spotlight, you know, to make bi-rotation what it is today. But I'm very solutions oriented, as is he. So for us, we kind of look at the bigger picture and we're like, you know what? It's a matter of a few years. You know, this is your calling. You got to see it through. And then, you know, there's a lot to live for even after this as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of life.
Exactly.
And so talking about what's next for bi-rotation in the community? Because it feels like you've just scratched the surface.
Yeah, we've just scratched the surface, especially in the US. So we only launched there 6 months ago. We've been having amazing organic growth. Again, you know, we're in that same sort of stage where it's the early adopters right now that are really growing the supply side dynamics and having a lot of influential people on the app as well. And it's so important to get that balance right in the early days to figure out what kind of brand you are. So for example, in the US, our average order value is 1.5 times our average order value in the UK. And that kind of positions us as a little more premium than what's out there. So it's super important. You know, we've got this global but local kind of, approach to all these different expansions that we're doing. Besides geographical expansion, I'm very, very interested in other categories. So verticals such as other premium lifestyle goods, luggage, maternity
related. I was just going to say luggage.
Yeah, we've actually seen them become listed on the app just by people themselves. We never encouraged them through marketing. But it's interesting because the user persona is the same of the person who's renting designer clothes. He or she might also want to rent a really nice suitcase for their holiday. So we're kind of, you know, the name is bi-rotation. It doesn't need to be limited to just fashion.
Yeah.
For us, our mission is to transform consumption for good.
And on that, tell me, I always ask everybody, what if you were on the roller coaster? And you are certainly on the roller coaster. And we've already established it's yours is a little bit more, I just have to say, a little bit more glamorous. I've just looked at your Instagram. I mean, Jesus, you know, you're not going to be seeing, I mean, wow, that's all I can say. But on this roller coaster, what would you say has been one of your biggest lows on the journey?
Yeah. As I mentioned before, I've been sued, I've been bullied, you know, even by other, you know, female founders in the space. But I think it hurts the most when you disappoint or cannot work things out with the people that are closest to you. So for me, the biggest low would be team turnover and how I learn each time to become a better leader for our entire team and all of our stakeholders. Because I am a first-time founder and CEO. I'm still figuring out what kind of leader I am, what kind of manager I am. And I really want to inspire my team and, you know, promote from within and, you know, help all of them have incredible careers, which I've been lucky to enjoy through having some great bosses.
Absolutely. The University of Entrepreneurs, it's like unbelievable what we learn. And it's self-development, you know, this whole journey. Or the, actually, if you forget everybody else, it is one of the most intense self-development
courses
you could go on, right? It really, really is. Tell me, what would you say conversely is your greatest high? Because you would be wearing the most glamorous blinking dress, wouldn't you, in that roller coaster? I mean, I just, honestly, that would be a good picture.
Yeah, if it's for a bi-rotation story, surely. But if I were doing it just for myself, I'm probably going to be in like my aloe yoga pants. I'm very known for dressing completely differently as well, beyond. You know, this glamorous sort of
yeah
life.
I know you have to have that other life, otherwise it's all one.
Exactly.
I totally get it.
Exactly. No pink dresses for me.
No pink dresses. Okay, so you're in the yoga pants in the roller coaster. What would you say is your greatest high?
I think if someone asked me right now, I think it's really the fact that we've created a business that has such an important and virtuous mission that truly walks the walk, you know, and it's impacting, you know, our customers' lives every day. You know, it's going beyond just having access to designers and clothes and all of that, but it's actually changing their mindset and making them more conscious and strategic. The fact that it's educating them, the fact that it's paying for their IVF. I mean, these are things that I didn't fully appreciate and imagine, and I'm so proud of them. Like, this for me feels like we shoot for the stars and this will be part of the legacy.
I love that. I've loved chatting to you. I think you're doing such an amazing job. I think now speaking to you, I thought this before, but now speaking to you, I don't think we've seen anything yet, and it's going to be incredible to watch your journey. Shita, I was going to ask you if you could share a note to your younger self and read your letter to younger self to this podcast.
Sure. Thank you so much, Holly. I have such good feelings from you, even across the screen, because we are recording virtually. But I really hope I get to thank you in person.
Absolutely. I'd love that.
So I did write the letter to my younger self, and I will read it now.
Thank you.
Dear Ishita, I know you used to write a journal, a secret diary, until the age of 16. One of those lock and key ones that were all the rage in the 2000s. I know most of the writing always made you feel very neurotic, both reading and writing it, and you didn't really like yourself that much in those teenage years. I am your future self, you see, twice the age of not very sweet 16. Because you've always been a bit of a worrier, I'll tell you up front. You turned out fine. You did good in life. You made a name for yourself. You made a name for your family. You managed to find harmony between profit and purpose while considering the climate crisis and Mother Nature. Because I know Papa always drilled into our minds that we can always be better, you will spend most of your life chasing the next milestone, always working towards achieving the next phase of your life. This will make you a high achiever, a go-getter, someone with very high standards for almost everything you do, someone that will inspire many others. But you will realize along the way that a majority of your wins will not make you feel very happy or fulfilled. So perhaps if this was the magical letter that could influence your mindset from an earlier, more impressionable age, here is what I would advise. Pursue your passions. In your case, these were the things you did outside school. Top grades in academics are a box-ticking exercise where you come from. What can you do that no one else can do? You were not only a great web and graphic designer with a commercial mind from the age of 11, but you also had a strong intuition on what would become the next big thing, the internet and people becoming more connected on it. On the same train of thought, be curious and courageous. Not everything that is to be found has already been discovered or invented. As much as you were trained to follow the rules and trust the system in Singapore, you will realize a majority of the processes and systems in our world and people are imperfect. Find these imperfections and problem solve for them. Truly become the change you want to see. Don't just talk or write about it. Do it. Thirdly, embrace being different, being independent, being in solitude. These will be the periods during which you will personally develop and grow the most. As you gain acute self-consciousness of who you are and who you aren't, this will help you understand your strengths and weaknesses from the outset, which will then help you plan and strategize what you are missing to achieve your ambitions. Simply by being relentless and resilient, you will already go further than others who may dare not even venture. Finally, the age-old saying is very true. Money cannot buy happiness. As much as you were brought up with the story of Papa creating his own destiny from rags to riches and the wealth disparities that you saw in India and Singapore, you will experience that the law of diminishing returns holds very true for wealth as well. As corny as it sounds, but the best things in life are free. I'll also tell you what you will find to be the best things in your life. Nature, adventure, sunshine, health, friendship, and love. Money will improve your quality of life, but it will never give you the freedom and peace your soul truly desires. I'd like to end my letter by saying something that you didn't hear much of growing up. I'm proud of you, Ishita.
Everyone listening, by the way, is proud of what you're doing. I've got to say that. And, you know, your family is so proud. However hard it is for Dad to say it, he's telling his friends, right? And one day he's going to have to tell you. It's coming. You know that, right?
I think so.
We're proud of you.
Thank you,
are
Holly.
Raising the bar for women.
Thank you.
You are doing something that is very, very important. And I'm really proud to know you. Your brain and the plight that you're on It's fireworks.
So kind, Holly.
I'm just honoured to know you. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you, Holly. And thank you again for the opportunity. And I mean, I really hope I get to thank you in person. You're such an inspiration to all the female founders, especially in the UK. You are so well known. And I hope I get to see you in person and exchange more stories.
I'd love that. I'd love that. Bless you. Thank you. Thank you for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this episode, can I ask that you share it with a friend and like, subscribe and review it too, so that together we can inspire even more people to follow their dreams to build a life they love.